Session number 20620, Reel 3.
William Titchard, Reel 3. So, you had a week's notice of embarkation.
Yeah.
So you knew where you were going from
Tilbury. More or less, yeah.
Right, yeah. So how did you get from where you were to Tilbury?
By road. Say naturally people was new in Kent and they were new all around there where we was going from. They must have had an idea, I don't know, with all this kerfuffle going on.
Yeah.
Because Armony was being guns, you know, and all that being moved. And
did they wave to you as you?
Oh, yeah. People were quite good, really. You know, did everything they could for us, you know. And as I say, all experience, and it was a beautiful experience, I'll tell you.
So, can you remember arriving at Tilbury Docks?
Like yeah,
what
yeah.
What did you see?
Oh, this massive ship, oh, it was massive. And, of course, then they had to shuffle us on board, as I say. Got us all on board, got all the armaments aboard. Then, I think we slept that night in dock. I'm not quite sure. We slept that night in dock, all down below decks, and the crew used to come round and used to say, "Now, Luke, if you feel seasick at all, just lie on your right-hand side and chuck your knees up into your chest, and you should be all right." And this is what happened, and it was smashing.
So it must have been quite an atmosphere on
the yeah. You've a job to explain it, you know, all the action that was going on around, you know. All the, you know, trucks, men, vehicles, guns. You knew it was obvious something was happening.
Do you know the name of the ship you went on?
No.
Do you know what sort it was?
No, I couldn't think of the name. Oh, it was a massive one.
Yeah.
Massive.
Could you hear the guns in France?
Yes. Oh, yeah, you could hear the big berthers, what they call the big berthers, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Were some people quite scared then?
I don't know, but... Oh, that was when I was abroad, that bet. That was when I went abroad, that was the only time, I'm afraid, there. But waiting to go over, you know, we heard what's name. Never bothered some road. It did seem to enter your mind. I don't know why. I don't know whether it was being thick, dense, or what. But you never thought about it.
So
that's being really honest. Never thought about it.
So you set sail when in the morning?
Yeah, set sail the next morning, and then we got across to Arromanches. That's where we landed on the beach.
And how long did it take you to get across?
I think it was. Couple of hours, I think, something like that.
And you saw the coast of France then, did you?
Yeah, I've seen France coming up. Yeah. Then as you got nearer, then you could see all the... What was going on, you know, trucks and all the... I forget what you call them now, these people that see the everything go, like beach masters, you know, mostly the Navy, I think, working with the CMPs. The army, CMPs, you know, military. They did a brilliant job, I thought. The MPs, they did. We used to call them some right names, but did I think during the war they did a brilliant job, I thought. And so, yeah, anyhow.
What was it like? What could you see of France? You know, what conditions?
You could see the building. You could see the farm buildings and that where they'd been shelled and that they had been shelled, and also. The battlements and the big guns would have been captured, and they were, you couldn't believe, you'd have to see them to believe it. And I took her to see him, and she couldn't believe it. And they were massive. He must have had all that time building up like that. And how we got ashore, the infantry, and I do not know. It must have been really hard and frightening, you know, with all the barbed wires up and everything, you know. They had to fight, and the tank traps and all that, they had to fight all that. And the mines and one thing, anyway.
So as you landed, tell me about actually landing.
Now, this was my first, when I got scared. And I landed down the ramp. Of course, it was so much, like, say, from here to you was water. And I had to go with my truck, the Toc H truck, that was a line truck, and helped to push it up the beach. And just as he was pushing it up the beach, so help me, there was three German fighters come right down the beach, strafing the beach. Well, can you imagine? I wasn't quite 19. And all this bodies falling around you with the strapping. And I just buckled down behind the truck and dug in the sand with my head, and I was crying my eyes out. And I thought, my God, what am I coming into? You know, this is how you thought, what are you coming into? Anyway, they went, and of course then the beachmasters and CMPs was telling you where to go. They had it mapped out, you know. They have like white tape out which way you had to go, because that white, between them white tapes wasn't mined, and that's how you knew where to go. And so then that's how, then I forgot that, just like that, I forgot it. And then we started going inland.
Right. So who was in your truck with you?
Pardon?
Who was in your truck with you?
We had three in our truck plus the driver.
Yeah. Do you remember their names?
I had Bernard Mudd, he was the driver. And two signallers. Cuffler was one. And I can't think of the other two. Cuffler was one. Oh, I can't think of the other two.
No.
And
so as you drove off,
if I were, I would say, I've got a, what's the name, David, a lot of signatures on what my mate gave me. All the signatures on the photograph. And anyway, we were told where to go, like, and as I say, not quite 90, I had my 19th birthday over there. And
So, what did you actually see as you drove off the beach? Can you remember that?
Yeah, well, when you landed on the beach, it wasn't long before you was on the lanes and roads going into the France itself. And what you're seeing was, it was heartbreaking for young lads to see until you got used to it. The stench was terrible, and you saw nothing but dead bodies in the ditches, mostly Germans and that. And they were all, they'd been stripped of the uniforms and everything. On me, and as I say, the stench was terrible, and you thought, well, you know, well, what are we coming into at all? So I think maybe that's what made your mind up to say, right, you're here, you're not going to go away, you've got to do what you've got to do, just forget it. And I think that's what I did, just put it in the back of my mind, do my job. And I don't think I can honestly say that I was frightened any time, because you had such good pals and comrades round you to talk to, mingle with, and pass the time of day with. And I can honestly, as I say, I can honestly say I was neither frightened nor scared.
Did you see any French civilians?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He was always after catching your cigarettes. First thing they did when they seen your cigarettes. And they were all over you, like, you know, they really made up that we'd got there, and because I think they had it rough, like, you know, really rough. And they were so pleased, and I say, I don't see, not same as now, like, you know, I don't think they have as much thought for you now. Maybe the elderly ones would, you know, still have the thought, you know, in their minds what we did for them, for the young ones, you know.
So you drove into Aramonche.
Yeah, we went to...
Where did you go?
Then we had to find a first gun position, which was it, and the weather was beautiful. God, it was gorgeous, red hot. And we had to find our first gun position, which was in a big wheat field. Of course, yeah, the gunners, like, they had to dig the gun pit, set the guns. Then that's when our work came in, then. Command post, lines to the guns. Then from the command post, then we had to find out where the forward OP was. You got a reference where to go. Then you had to go and lay that line then from the command post to the forward observation post. You laid that line, connected your phone up, then that's how communications went back into. Then, as I say, we was on standby then to any line break, because this is where you get more line breaks now than anything, with all the shelling that was going on. So you was kept busy.
So was it... Did you feel your training had been spot on?
I think it had, yeah. Because when you came to it, this is when you realised... You thought, well, if I hadn't took in what I was taught, I'd have been like a goldfish out of a bowl. And I'm really made up that I went in the army, I was taught all this, and I did a good job. I think I've done a good job, and I think people were pleased about it, and I was pleased about what I did, so...
So you spent your first night, you were quite near Aramonche,
were you? Yeah. But as I say, there was nothing going on. Everywhere was devastated, we shelled, because before they landed, the shells they threw over there was unbelievable. The Navy, what shells they threw over, of course, naturally everywhere was down to the ground, more or less.
So how long did you stay there?
Well, there was no definite time, because it all depends how... You can't say, really, because it all depended how much progress the infantry and that was making. The more progress they made, the more we had to up and away. You might be in one gun position one day, you're digging all the gun pits all out, and then within a matter of, say, maybe the same night, right, we're on the move, and you're off again to find the next gun place, gun position.
So you were almost constantly moving?
Moving up. Mm. As the infantry moved up, you moved up, because we was in 25-pounders. We wanting big stuff. Big stuff fires right from the back. But 25-pounders, we was like, it's more like an anti-tank gun as well. Like, there's a photograph up there to give you an idea what this 25-pounder was. And it was the bee's knees, that, the young 25-pounder, because it came out that the Jerry always thought that it was a belt-fed gun, because he used that much ammunition and that quick firing. It was brilliant. Them gunners were brilliant. And as I say, you moved up, the infantry moved up, you moved up. You might be in that position in 2 days, because the infantry had been held up. So it's all depend how progress went.
So what could you see of the action? Could you have a good idea of what they were firing at? And I mean, you had
it in your mind what you was firing at, especially when we laid that line to the forward OP, right, we'd perhaps stay there a couple of hours. The officers say, well, hang on here a couple of hours if you want, you know, get your breath back, what you've been doing. And you could see the front line, you know. And then you'd watch this, you'd hear the officer giving instructions to the artillery about where to fire, range, everything. And then you'd be sat there watching, and then you hear the shells coming over and see them dropping in the distance. Not far, you know, you could say, what, 300, 400 yards. It's not far, really, from enemy lines. And then, see, once they've fired their first salvo, then the officer has to readjust. That's where your signals come in. Readjust your range up 100 or down 100 or left 50 or right 50, you know.
So would you be passing the
signal? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. We'd say if I was in the command post standing by to do my job, and the signaller on the phone, the officer might, or a sergeant might say, give that lad a break for a couple of hours, will you? So I'd take over the phone for a couple of hours or so, or something like that. And that's how it worked. You worked between yourself. All communications was worked amongst yourselves. As I say, the only more or less special ones who were really clever was them that went up to the forward OP, and they could use the wireless and also use the Morse code very good, very, very good. And so they were the ones.
So they were picked for that job, were they? Because of their
Morse code? No, well, I suppose maybe their education might have been better, say, than what mine was. And they picked up things very quickly. As you know, some people are a bit slow picking things up, some pick them up just like that. You see, it's the same with me. If you gave me a plan of something to do, I'd be lost on that plan. But you let me see it done, and I'll do it. And it's up there and it stays there. And that's why all this training came in. You were shown what to do, and it stuck there. And that's how I...
So you must have met a lot of different officers.
Pardon?
You must have met a lot of different officers when you were,
Oh, yeah, they were, you know, in and out, like, you know, but they was more or less command posts, like, you know, or HQ or something like that. Because my mate used to say to me, he was a gunner, and he used to say to me, he said, Q-wall, as you say, Office Wallers, he said, you lot signallers, you know, because he was always on to us about me and how to do. He said, come on here, he said, and do something. And that's how it was brilliant, you know. The humour was great. It was great. And as I say, we did meet some of the officers, like, you know, and they were quite good, quite friendly, quite friendly. You know, they weren't the itty-tighty or anything like that, because... Let's face it, and say, they had a job to do, we had a job to do, so you could only do it together.
Do you remember any officers in particular, or particular places
you were? No, not really. There was only the one, and that was a major, that was later on. The officer didn't meet it was more Sergeant Major down, more or less, he was in contact with. Officers, not really, you know, because they was back in HQ.
Were any of the gun positions you were at, did they take direct hits? Did you see casualties?
I was in one. That was later on.
Yeah, right, okay. We'll come to that then. So, in the first few days and weeks, where did you move to?
Well, I think the second move we made was in another field, and everything was set out, gun pits and that. And it was a beautiful day, and we sat outside and nothing to do, like, you know, because we'd had a lull, you know, in the fighting, lulls in the shelling. And, the gunners always had a little place of their own in the gun pit where they sat undercover, like they made it undercover. And I sat on the edge of this gun pit talking to my mate, and then Jerry started shelling us with these 88s, and they were terrible. Anyway, they started shelling our gun position, And next thing, I said to my mate, look at that. Well, in a gun pit, when you're waiting to go into action, your shells are stacked pyramid style like that. See? All defused, ready to go straight into the gun. And next thing, these shells started to roll. And believe it or not, the sergeant come out of the dugout to try and stop them rolling, and the lot went up. By him, you know, just he thought it was his job to do something. You know, don't think, do it. And that's how he was trained, do it. And it was a shame. I think he's, I'm not sure he was Sergeant Daly, I'm not sure his name.
So you were quite close to that?
Yeah.
What effect did that have on everybody?
Well, not a lot really, because you was getting used to seeing that many dead people. You know, it grew on you. You know, same as even now, I don't like to say anything like this. If I see a dead person now, if I go to a funeral, forgive me back for saying it, you know, a sister, and I felt for her, but it meant nothing really, because I've seen so many that it was heartbreaking. Heartbreaking. But as I say, you had a job to do, get on with it.
Yeah. Did anyone break down in your time in Normandy?
No, not in the artillery. I didn't see any. No. I think, this second gun position, it was a beautiful day, and we had this bombardier, a full bombardier, and he was a Jew. Now, the story I got, whether it was true or not, I believe it was, he went into this cornfield, he had nothing to do, and he went into this cornfield with a book to read. Anyhow, somebody wanted him, he was missing. Anyway, they went looking. Somebody said he went over there with a boot. They found him dead. Now, whether he'd done it himself, I wouldn't like to say, or whether it was just a heart attack. But I believe the different ones he spoke to, he was frightened of being captured, being a Jew. And that's for you. It's same. It's so simple, you know, how things happen. We were in this field, I think it was the same field if I'm not mistaken, and we had this sergeant walking along edge, you know, just walking along, nice day, bang, stood on the mine, didn't he? And that was it, gone.
So you were very well aware of
things. So you was aware of what things could happen. And you had to be, you know, it made you more wary, you know. You didn't have to be relaxed or anything like that. You had to be on the ball all the while, you know. Be ready for anything. And that was where all that training came in. Otherwise, if you didn't, well, you were just walking into a bullet and saying, that's it.
So you were living, what, in foxholes?
Yeah, or you put your tent, you put a bit of a cover up or something like that, just got down, and you're never allowed to undress or anything like that. You had to do your sleeping in as you were, you know.
How hard was the living? You know, I mean, you got fed.
During the summer season, it was all right, it was brilliant, but when it comes to the bad seasons, it was bad.
This
is where I say again, your fitness came in. If you wasn't fit, you was out.
Tell me about, you know, in the early days, you know, how you would make a foxhole and how you would arrange for latrines and food and water. And
well, you always had a man to two men to do them latrines, or if they had no time to do the latrines, you had to do it where you could. And I've lost myself.
What about food and water? Was that sort of how well organised? Oh,
he had your water wagon, so he was all right there. There was no problem there. Meals, when they could. As I said, you could be in a gun position maybe 2 or 3 hours, and maybe the cook house would try and set up something for you, you know, outside, me, you know, in the billets, in when they canned and what I do. And then they'd probably say, right, we're on the move. Saying that was it, you had to move, whether it was food was ready or not. So this is it, you had to put up with it. And as I keep stressing to you, this is where your fitness came in. And we never went short, really. You got used to your bully beef and biscuits. And the biscuits,
so you carried that with you, did you?
Only as a ration, if you were going anywhere. If you was on the move, you had to give you a 24-hour ration. And bully beef, biscuits, maybe a cigarette, things like that. No, it wasn't very big, excuse me. It wasn't very big. The biscuits you couldn't eat. So what you had to do with them was make porridge out of them.
How did you do that?
Well, you had your billet, your tins, then you put water in the tin, and you had a petrol can, and you filled it with sand, then you poured petrol in the sand, then you set light to the sand, then you put your billet on with the water, then crunch all the biscuit up, made a porridge of it like that. See how adaptable you get. Yeah. Look after yourself.
Yeah. So, did you, forage for anything, fruit or anything?
No, not really. We'll say, when you wanted feeding, it was there for you. You know, it was there for you. The cooks and that, they had an hard job, like, you know, because they had a kitchen to set up, you know, and they couldn't do anything posh or anything like that. Just a straightforward meal, big tin of porridge or big stew or something like that, you know, something like that, you know.
So did they keep you briefed at all about how the invasion was going?
Well, not really. It's only what information you got over the wireless, you know, from your mates, and give you an idea, say, oh, well, you know, we're having it rough up the front, we might be held up for a long while or something like that. Or just that. That's the only way you'd get information. See, the most people that know about anything like that was the people up the front. That was the infantry or your forward OP for the artillery. They'd see what everything was going on, and they knew how it was going, whether it was going bad or whether it was going good, you know, whatever.
What opinion did you have of the Germans you were fighting?
Yeah. They were quite good. They were quite good fighters, really. Yeah.
Did you think of them as Nazis?
No, not really. No, it's just that he was there. We was fighting the enemy, that was all. We didn't think them as swastika men or anything like that. They were Germans. We had to do a job to drive them back out of the countries, finished, and get peace. And that's all we thought about. Never thought of them as bad guys or anything like that. No. And some of the prisoners you met, they were brilliant. They were glad it was all over.
So you met prisoners?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Did you talk to any prisoners?
Well, best way you could, you know, and they said he was always glad it was, and more or less told us what they was told. You had a job to do, get on with it. You had no option. I couldn't have turned around and say, I could have turned around and said, I'd be a conscientious objector, but it'd have been the worst fella in the world. I wouldn't have had a peace of mind, would I? So, and they were more or less the same. They were had to do what was told. And they had a lot of young chaps in, like we had.
So they were not sorry, in a way, to be taken prisoner. Did they know they were losing by then?
Well, I think your minds have had an idea, but them that were taken prisoners, they knew we're out of the war now, we're safe. That's it. We'll take us back now till after the war, when you're a prisoner.
Mm. didn't feel ashamed.
We say they weren't treated like our chaps were. We say our chaps, they were taken prisoner at Dunkirk with what, four or five years, was it? And, you know, you'd have to talk to somebody from Dunkirk who was prisoner of war or anything like that to find out the truth, you know. But you say these films you show of them on the television, you can't always believe whether they're right or whether they're wrong, you know, or whether it's all hyped up. You'd have to find out of the people themselves. Yeah.